I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to episode 3 of our special series, Truth Tellers. Today, we're taking you down to Portland, Oregon, where there is a fantastic truth teller by the name of Tara Fowl. I first became acquainted with Tara just over social media, and I was in awe of her documentation of the decline of Portland, both when it comes to the homeless crisis and the drug crisis, the exceptional access that she gets to document those who are in states of despair on the streets down there. She also, and she started this really, by documenting what was happening on the streets of Portland during the Summer of Love in 2020. We are happy to have Tara Fowl on today and to celebrate her as a critical truth teller. Tara, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you.
Drove all the way up from Portland today.
I did.
I love it. I wanted you in person because, one, I think you're really cool. And you just, so I'm like, I want to be friends with her. So I got to get her here if I want to be friends with her. I don't know how I came across your stuff. I think the algorithm just fed it to me. And now I get it all the time.
Cool.
And I love what you're doing because it's just, you can't dispute it. It's pictures, it's video.
You would be surprised.
Well, I'm sure there are people dispute it. We'll talk about it. But it to me, that's the most powerful form of truth telling because you're not doing what I do. I mean, I give my opinion. This is a picture. It's a video. So how did you get started in documenting what was happening in Portland?
It was a little bit of an accident, actually. Because I've always been into the arts. So, for instance, I paint portraits, I draw, I would sew clothes for my kids. And I've always liked taking pictures, but it wasn't really a thing of mine. And then to go along, I guess, with the truth-telling theme here, in 2020, everything was falling apart. And the news was saying this was happening and people were saying that was happening. But what I saw in front of me was not what people were saying. So I grabbed my camera phone and initially just started walking around taking pictures of what reality was and trying to show it to people because I was getting sick of even family members who didn't live in Portland saying, what you're saying isn't true because that's not what the news said. And so in the process of that, a friend of mine handed me his old DSLR camera, showed me how to use it. And as I was trying to learn to do street photography, I just kind of fell into interacting with the homeless, getting into conversations, going interesting places because those were the pictures I was interested in taking. And it just happened. I mean, I just ended up spending a lot of time in these places. I would walk into homeless camps and start talking to people and eventually started interviewing them. And then as that went on, I ended up teaming up with Kevin Dahlgren because he was doing a similar thing, but with a lot more experience. So, yeah, it was just one thing just cascaded into another.
Yeah. And so in 2020, was it primarily like the kind of deterioration of quality of life issues like homelessness and drug abuse? Or I know a lot was happening in Portland in 2020, like the riots and stuff like that. Did you get involved in documenting any of that?
Yeah. I was documenting the riots. That was really the main thing that I was upset about at the time because I lived in a riot zone. I don't live downtown, but I lived in a riot zone. And people were like, you can't live in a riot zone. It's only 2 blocks. Like, no, it was everywhere. I mean, our neighborhoods were getting destroyed. So I was trying to show people that the garbage, just like the insanity, the broken windows. There were drive-by shootings, there were home invasions, there were catalytic converter thefts, there were street takeovers. Like, it was just...
Yeah. Can I'll just be frank with you. I said this to a different guest who was here the other day. I mean, if I had to, like, draw a picture of a, what I would say, a far-left Portland resident looked like, I would draw a picture of you. If I had to draw a picture of, like... what an Antifa member looks like on their free time.
Well, you know
they
what?
They would draw a picture of you.
They did think I was with them a few times.
100%.
Yeah.
You'd be good. I mean, what are your personal politics, if I can ask?
That's a good question. I love Ron Paul.
Okay. I like that.
I voted for Trump.
You did?
3 times.
Would never guess that looking at you.
Three times.
The book by a cover thing is so true.
Yes, it's true. I grew up in a conservative Christian household.
Yeah.
I just look how I look.
You look fine, by the way.
Thanks.
I'm being super judgy.
No, I get it. And people, they assume that of me all the time.
Yeah.
Which I guess it's part of how I managed to go along in Portland because for the most part, people won't mess with me.
Yeah.
They think that I agree with them and I just let them go on believing that.
Yeah, I'm curious to what extent you're able to get away with that anymore because, you know, you do have a social media presence. You're out doing these things. So how has the, I know you have the same, you know, kind of Antifa types that we have in Seattle.
Yes, we do.
You know, I see how they treat Jonathan Cho here. I know how they've treated me here.
He's a maniac.
He's crazy, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So for you, have you become a target for being out there documenting what you're documenting?
I became a target because I was documenting them.
Yeah. Like going back to 2020.
2021.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, I started going out to events just because I wanted to know what was actually happening. So I would go and I would go out and I would watch Antifa. I would merge with the crowd and I would just see how they operated. And then I would show up at what you would call like a Patriot event,
yeah,
and see what they were doing. And then I witnessed the clash and was there for really big fights and stuff. So I was getting firsthand knowledge of what was going on. And then when they were doing some rioting in my neighborhood, eventually I decided to go out and directly start documenting it.
Yeah.
And when that happened, they ended up doxing me and
mm-hmm.
threatening my family. And
wow. So when they realized like you weren't with them, you were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I could still try to blend. I'm sure I just mm-hmm. don't want to. But yeah, I mean, I've gotten physically assaulted by them multiple times.
Wow.
I've gotten punched and they've tried to steal my stuff and I was dragged around on the ground at the Saturday market and just, yeah.
Yeah, I saw this wild video of a guy like riding his bike like full steam directly at you.
Yeah.
And you just standing your ground. And I don't know, did you really believe he'd swerve? Because I watched it and I was like, I would have jumped out of the way.
I was ready for him to hit me because he was going to look like an idiot if he did.
Yeah.
And I had the whole thing on video. So I was like, all right, if I'm going to get hit by a bike, I'm going to get hit by a bike and everyone's going to see it.
Yeah. What, I mean, because you started doing this as a private citizen. You know, it's not like you're out there with a news entity, like being, that's your livelihood. You have to document and do these things. I mean, that was the case for me. Like I was reporting. I had a job at Fox 13. I had to be out there doing these things. As a private citizen, I can't say I would have done it. So what kept you doing it, given the threats to your family, given the assaults and all of that?
Anger,
okay, that's fair.
Personal interest, and just being very stubborn.
Yeah. Since 2020, because obviously a lot of what I see now is your documentation of the homeless crisis and the mm-hmm. drug crisis, but since 2020 and like more of the conflict and the clashes, has the harassment and intimidation of you waned at all?
Yeah, it's okay. Definitely went down some. I still get some threats online from locals because a lot, Antifa often will disagree with my stance on homelessness, mm-hmm. that it's actually not a good thing that people are homeless. We shouldn't be encouraging it. We shouldn't be doing the harm reduction of handing out the foil and the boofing supplies and the needles. And if you don't know what boofing is, just look it up.
Yeah, we don't need to explain that.
Google it.
Yeah.
So the threats do come from that. I'll find mm-hmm. you in the streets. You know, watch out in the alleyways, or I saw you downtown. The next time I see you, I'm going to kick your ass or break your camera or whatever. Yeah. Like, and I got chased around by them. I was actually out with Kevin delivering food and clothing to a homeless person and ended up getting chased around and threatened by Trantifa, which I got to tell you is like the scariest thing in the world.
It's a real thing. Trantifa. I don't know who coined that phrase, but I love it.
I don't know. It's brilliant. And literally like, I don't get scared of a lot of stuff, but
mm-hmm.
yo, those people terrify me. Yeah. Getting chased around by a man in a dress with an Adam's apple who's like full of testosterone and wants to kick my ass.
Yep.
Like I'm not a huge person.
No.
And they're not convincing. So like, yeah.
I want to say maybe it was Andy No or something that started the Trantifa thing and documents it. But it is a real subsection of Antifa for sure. I'm curious on that because that happens here. You know, you have Andrea Suarez who like she's just out helping the homeless and clearing encampments and she's vilified as like this awful human being who's doing something terrible for these people when she's doing more for them than the Antifa types ever would. What do you tell yourself or believe motivates them to be so angry, so angered by what you're doing?
I don't think that they like people seeing reality. because they're very much about keeping things in the dark. They hide their faces. They're very secretive. And they like to have people believe a certain worldview. So that's why they don't want people with cameras when they're doing things, or because they want to control the narrative.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you're countering a narrative that they want to perpetuate, they hate you.
It's fascinating, though, because I've never seen a group of people so eager for attention.
Right.
Yet who pretend so much like they hate the attention.
That's true.
It's fascinating. You're out there dressed as ninjas, you know? You're desperate for attention. Or the Trantifa. So talk about, you know, when you go out to document a homeless encampment or an area of town, how do you pick it? How do you go about, like, deciding what you want to go document that day?
Sometimes it's just, we haven't been to this area. Mm-hmm. So most of the time that I'm going out now is often in tandem with Kevin. He's doing video. I'm doing photos. The two of our personalities mesh very well with the homeless community. We built a lot of trust with them. They kind of all know us. So we'll either say, all right, well, we haven't seen our people mm-hmm. in Chinatown recently, so we'll go there. But often it's just, we haven't been to this place recently. Let's go see what's going on over there. Or someone tells us, because we get information from people sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of times it will be that we're looking for a missing family member. So mm-hmm. we'll ask around, find out that person is probably hanging out on 122nd Avenue. So we go over, and whatever happens, happens. It's often usually like things just, they just happen.
Can I ask you about that? Because I saw this, I was following this thread of yours with this young woman who you were able to basically, you put her picture out. You were able to, somebody located her family and they came and scooped her up. Mm-hmm. Can you tell that story and where is she now? How did it end?
I would love to tell the story.
Undivided is sponsored in part by Future 42, making Washington a place for all to prosper. If you're frustrated by the results of the last election or frustrated by the direction of what's happening in Washington state, sign up for Future 42's newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to turn that frustration into action and actively get involved in making our communities and our state a better place. Future42.org, Future42.org. We all know that it's a difficult political environment for landlords, big and small, in Washington state. With new restrictions, new bills, new requirements, new taxes, you need to make sure that you have someone in your corner as a landlord to help you navigate this environment. Become a member of RHA today, the Rental Housing Association of Washington. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. It's about $260 a year. And not only do they advocate for landlords every single year when it comes to policymaking decisions, so you're helping when you become a member with that kind of work, but they're also going to be in your corner as a landlord, help you navigate the legalese, the difficult world of regulations that can vary city to city, county to county, and obviously state to state. So especially if you're a small to mid-sized landlord and you don't want to go it in this political environment on your own, become a member of RHA today. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right, the new year is upon us. That means you might be making some sort of New Year's resolution. How many of you are planning on making a New Year's resolution to lose weight or get healthy? We particularly feel that pressure after the holidays because, let's be honest, there's a lot of food intake involved in the holidays, and you might be feeling less than ideal, like you put on a few pounds, low on energy. Well, I have something that you can do for yourself today. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team over at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I lost 30 pounds in 2 months on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, and I've been able to keep it off for 2 years through some simple, healthy lifestyle changes. There's no drugs, no injections, no strenuous workout routines. They just teach you what to eat in the right portions and how to take steps to keep the weight off for life. So do what I did, what so many other Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. C today. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com.
Ariel is a young woman who, she's 27, I believe. She had been living in the same tent in the same spot in Portland on Burnside in a very, very public place in the middle of a sidewalk for months. Mm. And there would be, you know how camps get posted? There would be a green sign that says you need to move by this date. She would get posted, she would take it down, and nobody ever made her move. So in the time that I started interacting with her between the beginning of this year and now, so for a year, I've watched her just fall apart. Mm. And when she first showed up, you could tell that she had definitely some mental health issues. So you can't hold a conversation with this woman. Her brain is addled. She's on drugs. But the city just leaves her there to fall apart. You know, she's getting sexually abused. She's doing drugs, you know, like all the gambit, whatever. So, but she was doing okay. Then I watched her get worse and worse and worse until recently when her tent was so full of garbage and so surrounded by rotting trash and rats and bugs and birds and whatever that she could barely fit in the tent. She was like sitting on top of a pile of garbage and her head would poke out of the top of the tent. And I would stop and I'd be like, hi, Ariel, how are you doing today? And she would poke her head out and say hi to me and I'd bring her some food or whatever. But it just got so, so bad and it was getting cold that I'm like, she's going to die. Mm-hmm. She's going to die out here because she's running out into the street sometimes. She's assaulting random people because she thinks that they're rapists and they're going to eat her baby. And I was like, all right, well, if nobody's going to do anything, I'm just going to do something about it because people see my photos and they usually reach out to me.
Yeah.
That's my son. That's my cousin. Wow. Whatever. And I was like, well, if people see my photos in that way, then I'll just do it the opposite way. I'm going to put her photo out and ask people to find her family for me. Mm-hmm. And within a day, I got enough feedback and help from other people who like, thank you guys so much. That I found her sister, her dad, and her best friend.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah.
The internet. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
So the best friend was the contact I was mainly working with and got a lot of information about her. Then I'm pressed upon him. I'm like, she's going to die. People have, like, trafficked her. Somebody tried to kill her by hot-shotting, like, a lethal dose of drugs. Just... you guys need to get her out of here. And so the dad called me on a Saturday night asking, where is she? How do I find her? I gave him a pin on a map. He drove overnight.
From where?
Bellevue.
Wow.
Well, near Bellevue. But
like here, near here?
No, sorry. Bellingham.
Bellingham. Bellingham. Oh my gosh, yeah.
And so then I got another call on Sunday morning and they're like, Ariel's taking a shower and we're feeding her breakfast.
Oh my God.
And I was like, are you serious? You got her to leave? Like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would be a fight. It turns out it was still kind of a fight because when she got there and she realized she didn't have her drugs, she was really upset and she has to come back. And I was like, you can't send her back here. No. And by no means is anyone driving her back to Portland so she can die.
Yeah.
If she wants to be homeless, let her be homeless there because then the law is actually going to do something about it and she'll get care. Which is what happened. So
had the family or friends been looking for her? Did they know she was living on the streets? Did they?
They didn't know where she was.
But they knew she wasn't in a good place, I imagine.
They knew that she had made some bad decisions. Mm-hmm. I don't know the full extent of what they knew, but they didn't know where she was. And the best friend said that he had been looking for her for ages.
Wow. So why not contact the city or the police in Portland and say, hey, this woman's here. She says she's been raped. She's been trafficked. She's about to die. Why not, from your perspective, contact the city?
Because they're not going to do anything about it.
Isn't that sad?
Everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm.
She's already breaking laws. Like, you can't camp in the middle of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
You can't hit random people who are walking by.
Mm-hmm.
At this point now, you can't smoke meth in public.
You could for a couple years.
You could, right? And people still do. I mean, just whatever. But there's already things that could have been done that weren't being done. She's obviously a danger to herself, but we have such a low threshold for high threshold for what that means that they don't do anything, or someone will be too crazy to be, you know, taken in and they just dump them back out. So
it's just sad that you like us, hundreds of millions of dollars on homelessness, yet there's a woman clearly in desperate need, about to die, and you're telling me we don't have the functioning service to get her help?
No,
like, what are we spending that money
on? It's like a hands-off approach. It's
insane.
It's, you know, they don't believe that she's a harm to herself or others, so they can't do anything about it. And if they don't accept help, what are you going to do? Like, somebody can overdose on the sidewalk, get revived by medical personnel, where, you know, we have the fire department and the ambulances and the whole freaking town is showing up to like wake this person up. And then they offer, would you like to come in and get more medical care? And they're like, no.
Nope.
Okay, we'll sign the paper. Or you're laying on the sidewalk and your leg is rotting off. Would you like to come in with us to get medical care? No. Sign the paper. Like, sign your death warrant.
We've done our job.
Because they can't do anything. Like, it's kidnapping if they take them in.
Yeah, well, they should be able to do something. The problem is they are... Their hands are tied in so many instances by these policies. And so did the family bring her back to Bellingham, Washington?
Mm-hmm.
They did, because we have similar policies here that are very hands-off. So you're saying she got back, from what you're told, she didn't want to be there because she didn't have her drugs. So did she wind up back on the streets in Bellingham already, or?
For one day.
For one day. And then what happened to her?
So I said, like, if she's not willing to stay home, please just take her to a shelter until you figure out how we're going to get her into services, because she needed detox, she needed mental health care, she needed like everything. So she left the shelter, I guess, slept on the sidewalk, and apparently there something is done when somebody does that, because the police showed up to arrest her, and whatever behavior she had going on at that point, they stopped arresting her and put her into a locked mental facility for assessment.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah.
Because Bellingham is one of the most progressive cities in Washington.
Well, apparently they're better than Portland.
Yeah, so we'll have to follow up with them, because I wonder what it was. I mean, I don't know what, maybe she was breaking a law actively and they arrested her for it, which, you know, I think in Seattle that even happens too, but.
Really?
Sometimes.
What a crazy place.
Wow. Well, see, you know, it's nice. Like, at least we're doing better than somewhere. I want to hear that, right? I mean, that's an awesome story. I mean, you saved her life. You absolutely saved her life. And that's what gets me about the people who want to vilify someone like you. It's like, what the fuck are you doing for homeless people?
I know.
Except keeping them in filth and squalor and on the path to death.
Yeah.
You, some of your pictures are just remarkable, because you have these homeless individuals or drug users who will let you actually take pictures of them as they're abusing drugs. I mean, what do you have to, is it just that trust that you've built with them, or?
I guess so. I've been doing it for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I would just walk up to people and be friendly and talk to them about this or that. And they would light up and I would say, would you let me take a picture of you smoking?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, and it's not just like, it's not, I don't want people to think it's like the National Geographic, like, you know, with the starving kid that they pictured who was about to be eaten by a bird, because you also have been out there helping them. Like, yeah. I mean, Ariel is a great example of that. So, I mean, when do you kind of make the decision about, like, do I offer some sort of help, whether it's food or clothes or something, to this person? Or is that just part of it? Like, are you packing it around? Like,
I am packing it around.
Yeah.
My car is a mess.
Yeah.
The whole backseat is full of coats and socks and hand warmers. The trunk is full of food, and for humans and for pets, because now, like, we're feeding dogs and cats.
Yeah, I saw a story about a cat the other day. You were trying to figure out where the cat was.
I actually stopped there this morning on the way here and climbed down a muddy hill. This is why I'm dressed like this, to see if the cat needed food. And there was a guy down there shaving and burning pot leaves over a fire. And we chatted a little bit and then I left.
Yeah. Who's paying for that? Who's paying for the coats and the food and the...
It's a combination. The coats mostly were donated to me.
Mm-hmm.
I threw an event for fun recently and asked people to bring me coats and socks. So sometimes I just go to Costco and buy them because, you know, you can get something decent for cheap.
Yeah.
And people send me donations for, sometimes they say for pet food or for feeding people or for socks or whatever. So I'm able to just assess people's needs if they ask me for something when I'm out, or I offer, and I just, you know, keep filling the car with whatever I'm running out of. So,
yeah. That's awesome. Do you get the sense? So in Oregon, voters decided to decriminalize drugs. That was 2020. 2020.
It was a disaster.
And I mean, I'm assuming you didn't support that to begin with.
No, although everyone thinks I did.
Yeah. Why do they think you did?
Look at me.
Well, see, I told you. Yeah, look at
me. No, but then I'll post things online, and they'll be like, "Well, you voted for this," and I was like, no, "How do you know what I voted for?" Well, look at you.
Yes. No, I didn't. So that happened, and that was just wild. I mean, we de facto did, but we didn't full blown, you know, do it. And voters certainly didn't do it here. So, what did you see the real time impacts of that decriminalization do on the streets of Portland?
It was just a freak show, really. I mean, it was like the gates of hell broke open and you have people that are acting possessed. They're doing everyone has their name for it, but Fetty-lean. You know, the Fetty-lean, the slump, the whatever, people, you know, doing all these contortions and people dying on the streets. There's human poop everywhere. And I was taking pictures of it because I was getting sick of it. I'm like, look at this. We're not supposed to live like this. And people are like, how dare you show us that? Or that's not really happening.
Yeah. Jonathan Cho got his YouTube account suspended because he posted a video of a man just
pooping everywhere,
like actively pooping, which I think is why. But I mean, it's like if you can't show people this, they don't believe it.
No. And then when you do show them, they get mad at you. They're like, why would you take a picture of that?
Yeah. Exploitation.
How dare you? Yes. Yeah. You're shaming this person. I'm like, they're not shaming themselves by pooping in public. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was like hell. It was hell broke loose. You have it's like demons and poop and drugs and death and people having sex on the sidewalk and naked people, and it just exploded all at once.
Yeah.
And people were coming here from everywhere. And I would ask people where they were from. They're not from here. And I would ask why they're here, and they were like, so I can do drugs.
Easy.
Duh. I mean,
of course. I love when people deny that happens.
I know.
That there's a transient population that comes here because they can get free stuff, do drugs, no one's going to bother them. Yeah. No one's going to move them. So what was it, even in a deep blue city like Portland, and I guess it was statewide, that woke them up to the realization that that experiment did not work?
Enough people saw. Yeah. And enough communities were affected. Because it wasn't just Portland. It was everybody who had some kind of services to offer in their small cities or towns.
Yeah.
And their libraries were getting overrun with, you know, people doing drugs or their parks. So it spread far enough that people realized this was a mistake. We were fed a lie because they were told that there would be more mental health services and detox facilities and that we would be putting the money towards that instead of incarceration. But that didn't happen, and they didn't set anything up to do that before they decriminalized it, and then they didn't do anything afterwards.
Yeah.
So it's like they lit a freaking bonfire of just insanity and walked away.
I have urged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Why? We all need insurance. Why else? We could all save a little bit of money. So many undivided viewers and listeners throughout 2024 saved thousands upon thousands of dollars by doing the First Mark Challenge. What does it entail? Well, you schedule some time with First Mark, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They'll go over all your current insurance plans with you, talk about your insurance needs, and then they'll go out, they'll shop the market for you, and they'll come back with their recommendations. Undivided viewer Sarah just finished the First Mark Challenge. She said, we're now saving over $1,100 annually for our auto and home combo. We did end up paying more for earthquake insurance than we are now, but First Mark told us our earthquake coverage was terrible, so we needed to pay a little more to know that we're properly covered should a quake happen. She said, I'm so glad I finally talked to them. My only complaint is that we should have made this change months ago. And I hear so many stories like that. So don't wait. Take the First Mark Challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Did you notice how the market responded right after the election? Are you happy with how your retirement portfolio is positioned? Is your portfolio actively managed? Well, maybe it's time to get another perspective. It's always smart to get a second opinion when it comes to critical health decisions. Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, feels it's no different when it comes to the health of your retirement portfolio. You can get that second opinion with Bulwark's free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review, where they'll cover the impacts of the election, an outlook for 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. You only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Schedule your free portfolio review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. The real estate market has been pretty slow, but that doesn't mean that you can't still get a great price for your home. So if you're thinking about selling your home in 2025, reach out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that your home stands out when it hits the market. He can also help make sure that any cosmetic upgrades to your home are made. He can manage those projects. They can even help you pay for it up front through something called their Listing Boost Concierge Service. So make sure you check that out. Go to their website, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. Well, similar to the defunding the police debate, where they said, and I've said all along, I love the idea of defunding the police. If we live in a utopia and we don't need police, yeah, absolutely. I'm limited government, so take some of those funds if we don't need them. But that's not the situation we're in. But they defunded the police to go to alternatives, and they never had alternatives even. They didn't even have the concept of what the alternatives would look like, which makes no sense. So did things have things gotten, I mean, I know they're still bad because I see your pictures, I see your videos, but are they better than they were at whatever the depth of the worst part of it was?
Yes.
They are.
Yes.
And how does that manifest? How can you tell things are better?
There's less bodies laying around, I guess. I mean, that's a good indicator. You walk around and there's just less people like laying on the sidewalk. Maybe it's just because it's winter and they're in their tents. I don't know. But the city has been very proactive in moving people around lately, but I don't know where they're moving them to because they were supposed to be deflecting people into some help. So they would get arrested for being camped and then they would get put into, you can go to like jail or you can get housing. It hasn't really been working. So I don't know what they're doing with these people. Yeah. I think they're just moving around because you'll find pockets and.
Yeah. But I almost think that has, you know, I don't think that's a solution, right? But I do think it has a deterring effect.
It does, yeah.
Because you're not comfortable. It's like, no, we're not going to make it comfortable for you to sit in this tent in front of a storefront and do drugs and die.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's like those people from out of state, okay, well, maybe I don't go to Portland because they're just going to bother me every 3 days or whatever it is. It seems Ted Wheeler, I want to talk about something he said recently that pissed me right off.
Oh, Teddy. Yeah.
But he seems to have, since 2020, come back to real life a little bit. Is that a fair interpretation? Did he wake up a little bit from the far left nuttiness?
I can't say. I don't know what's in his heart.
Yeah.
I feel like he is a people pleaser and he just wants to do what he thinks people want. So he may not have been all about the far left thing. I don't know what it is he actually thinks. He seems like a people pleaser and generally a nice guy, but with no backbone.
With no moral compass. That kind of, I can see that because I think that is kind of our mayor as well. It's like, what's politically palatable? Because he was kind of cheering on the riots to a certain extent. I mean, he was excusing them in large part. And he came out this week. He's doing his sort of farewell tour on the media. And he absolutely went a full-throated attack on the far-left political violence and what his family went through. And I watched that and I was just like, where was that 4 years ago?
I know. There are things that you just can't say, I guess. It's political. It's terrorism in Portland.
Yeah.
I mean, people are just terrified to say certain things, especially if they're in office. But, you know, once you're on the way out, you can say it. I'm going to guess that he's probably going to move really far away.
Well, he talked about his family being targeted, which I never condoned. But, like, you know, it's kind of this, woe is me, I was targeted. And it's like, well, your lack of a backbone allowed other people to be targeted. So I just don't feel
kidding.
Bad for you.
My family was targeted.
Yeah, it's you condone it. It's simple. I don't think you should be the mayor or a leader of anything if you don't have the ability to say the difficult things. And that's been the problem in Seattle is they don't want to say the difficult things because of the far left. Like, they're very scary. They're threatening you and do all these things. What should we know about the new mayor? I don't know much about him.
Keith Wilson is not a politician.
Yeah,
he's a businessman, and he made a lot of promises about solving the homeless situation. I've talked to him a little bit. He actually used some of my photos for his campaign.
Oh, nice.
And because of the weird ranked choice voting craziness that we have there now,
yeah,
he ended up winning. And it was kind of a surprise, though. I think everybody thought Renee Gonzalez was going to win. And there was some kind of out-of-state dark money that funded a campaign against Renee Gonzalez.
Okay.
So there were posters all over that said, don't rank Renee as like in your ranked choice voting.
Okay.
So some dark horse named Keith Wilson made his way in. We'll see. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I've heard from the people who I think are more sane that they're optimistic. And I think having a business-minded person is always good because you're like, the businesses have been so devastated by all of this stuff that's going on. So somebody who actually understands like businesses aren't the enemy, maybe that's a good place to start.
But, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
So where is the, what is the kind of, is there an end game for you? Is there a, do you get paid to do this at all?
No. I mean, every once in a while I'll do something for like a political candidate.
Yeah. What's your job?
I'm a housewife.
Well, that's awesome.
I have homeschooled kids.
And your husband's okay with you out traipsing through homeless encampments? And
well, here's the deal. It's preferable to me getting beaten up by Antifa and going to riots. So it was like the riots were so bad that homeless people seemed safer in the end.
I agree. I'd rather go into homeless camp than into a crowd of Antifa. I do agree with that.
Yeah.
He's got to be. My husband would be like, not on your life.
He's been patient.
Yeah.
I mean, and it kind of came out of nowhere because honestly, I have four kids. They're all homeschooled. None of them, we don't even hire babysitters. So it's like,
yeah.
I was at home with the kids full time for over 10 years. I mean, I just didn't go anywhere or do anything. And then 2020 just kind of unraveled everything. And I ended up with a hobby. And he's okay with it now. There are some stories that I don't want to tell when I come home.
Yeah.
Like people with guns or whatever. Or how much fentanyl smoke I accidentally inhaled.
Yeah.
Et cetera. But
it sounds kind of sexist, but like who's watching the kids while you're out with the homeless people?
Oh, my husband works from home.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah. Okay. And I have two teenagers. So it's like,
yeah,
they're a little bit self-sufficient. And yeah. So it'll be like, I'm gone for a couple of hours and I come back and spend a million hours editing photos.
Man, I think it's really cool what you're doing. I wish there were 100 people in up and down the West Coast who were doing that, because it's just, to me, like I was saying earlier, it's the rawest form of journalism that there is. Here's a picture. I didn't make it up. It's not AI.
No.
Like, see it. I mean, what do you think it's really going to take for some of these cities like Seattle, like Portland, like San Francisco to have a genuine wake up and start supporting policies that will actually solve these problems?
There has to be some kind of a rock bottom. And I don't know if that means that they lose all the fun things in life. Like, we don't have any good restaurants or businesses anymore because they all left. Or they can't afford to live there anymore because the government is so, like, overtaxing them that they can't live their lives anymore, or their kids get messed with. I don't know. Like, there's going to be some kind of breaking point for every person, but people are leaving. Like, the common sense people are leaving, and the business owners are leaving, and the money is leaving. So when you don't have the money anymore, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And they're just going to make everyone angrier and angrier until they either leave or they vote for something else. But I don't know, man. The voters in Portland are retarded. Like, it's just a sea of retards. And they can't.
That is the first time. I know the R word's making a comeback. It hasn't made a comeback on our show until now.
Well, I was
so not. So you pulled off the band-aid, which I'm fine with. She told me
I can't say the C word. So
I did. That's the only swear word. So
no, but like, they can't wrap their minds around voting a different way. Like, it's not even in their vocabulary. They don't even look, they don't consider, like, because they're just taught, we are nice people and this is what nice people do.
Yeah.
We're good people.
As if that's good, as if leaving Ariel there to die in filth and trash is a good, is compassionate.
It's compassionate.
And what good people do.
It's good, yeah. Mm. We just let people die the way they want to. So, I don't know. Like, people can't even consider changing who they vote for or their side.
Yeah.
So then you need to have like moderate people come in, which is a little bit of what has been happening.
Yeah.
With because Keith Wilson.
Is what does he consider himself?
I don't know. Going to guess he's a Democrat.
Yeah.
But you have old school Democrats.
Right.
And you have whatever this is now, progressive nightmare retardation.
Oh, and that's, you crack me up. That's the thing is like, I'm not telling you to vote for Donald Trump. I'm not telling you to become a Republican, a card carrying member of the GOP. But there's a lot of space between a liberal Democrat and a progressive or a democratic socialist. There's a lot of room there to pick someone who understands what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Just one last thing. From everything you've seen, the people you've met, the stories you've heard, if you could get in the ear of some of these politicians who are in these positions to make a difference and tell them what's not working, what would you say?
I would say that the hands-off approach, especially of just not prosecuting crimes, mm-hmm. just at a base level, has let people's lives unravel to the point where you can't put it back together again.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been ruined by that lack of like civilization, I guess.
Yeah.
So we need to actually, if we're going to have laws, we should enforce them, because this lawlessness has destroyed people. And it's not just the drugs. It's a lot of things that lead up to people just shipwrecking their lives. And if they're not dead, they're still dead to the world. So we need to do something to like cut that off so that we stop sucking in people from all over the country to come die or effectively die mm-hmm. in our streets. And I'm sure like Seattle is got a very similar problem. And it's terrible because we're ruining families, and it's not just here. It's people from everywhere. Their families are being torn apart. They're losing their children and their parents. Like, people with families, men and women, leave their families and they come to Portland and just get destroyed.
Yeah.
And they're never seen again. Or if they are, they're not themselves anymore. So this whole experiment has been bad.
Why do you care, though? Why don't you could just move? Your husband works from home. I imagine you don't have to be in Portland. Take your kids, move somewhere else.
It's a little complicated. My husband's job is actually located in Portland.
Yeah.
I'm from Oregon. My parents live on the coast. My family is still there. And if we move, like, we're not staying in Oregon anymore. We're not staying on the West Coast anymore.
Yeah.
And we have a good interest rate on our house.
There's that. I mean, but you have to believe it's salvageable. I don't think you'd be doing what you're doing if you don't believe it's salvageable.
And if it's not salvageable, then at least in the end, the truth can be shoved into people's faces and they can use it as a warning.
Yeah.
And that's been part of what I've been at this whole time, is like, you need to see everyone around the country what's happening here so that you don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't be us.
We have to save the West Coast, because or else that brand of progressivism is going to be exported elsewhere in the country.
Yeah.
And my mom in Minnesota won't think she's a Democrat anymore, because she'll see what a real Democrat looks like.
I know.
How can people follow your work or support your work and see what you're doing?
Well, I'm on the platform formerly known as Twitter, which is now X. And I don't like saying it. It's just like,
I'm mess it up.
I'm too old for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm Tara Fall, my name. 503 on Twitter X, and I am Ghost Portland on Instagram, and that's about it.
Cool. And if they want to help out with anything, they can just get in touch with you.
Yeah. I have Venmo, I have Cash App, I have Sweet. How do you say it, Zelle or Zelle?
Zelle.
Is it Zelle?
Yep.
Whatever. Yes, I have those things. Or if they're local, they can bring me some socks or whatever.
I love it.
Yeah.
Keep doing what you're doing. I so appreciate you coming all the way up here. And we'd love to just stay in touch. And because I do think that, and I was telling you this before we started, It has to be a West Coast shift because the problems are all the same. I mean, we had on Anna Kasparian, who lives in LA, and it's fascinating to listen to the exact same shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is all the same stuff caused by the same policies.
Yeah.
So I feel like if we can kind of band together across the West Coast with some common sense people, we can change things faster than we could on an island. So totally love what you're doing.
Yeah.
Keep it up. Stay safe.
Well, safe-ish.
Safe-ish.
Yeah. It helps that I'm working with Kevin, so yeah. He scares people away.
Yeah. Stay safe, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Okay.
That has been episode 3 in our special series, Truth Tellers. I'm really excited about episode 4. We're going to reintroduce you to a young woman named Annalee Wilson. Annalee is 15 years old, and she has become one of the most important voices when it comes to speaking out to protect girls' sports. Annalee is going to join us to tell her story in episode 4 of Truth Tellers. We can't wait. You can watch Truth Tellers for free across all of our platforms, but if you'd like to support our show, you can do that for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com.